And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3,773 of the Survival Podcast. We're hitting it just a little bit early, but early's okay. Late is never good. So we'll take advantage of an extra 5 minutes of buffer today. We're going to be talking today with a great guest. I should have asked him, but I think it's Birkinshaw, Jeff Birkinshaw. I always try to ask people their last name, and I forgot to do that in our pregame. I hate mispronouncing somebody's name, but he's going to be talking about, well, you can see it right there in the title, living off grid like a millionaire. Can you really do that? Well, I mean, I guess if you are like a multimillionaire, you probably can, but what if you're not? We're going to be talking to Jeff about that. We're going to talk about how he got started, like, and what was the motivation to do it? Doing it with kiddos, because this is not a some guy that just went off by himself. Him and his wife and his girls live kind of out in the wilds of, I don't know what province, but they're somewhere up in Canada. They're obviously all really motivated and a little bit outdoorsy. He was just telling me in the pregame, he's here stuck doing a podcast with me. His wife's out shooting elk, and she got herself an elk this morning. That's pretty awesome. And so we're going to talk about a lot of cool things that are right in the wheelhouse of this community. I'll taunt Jeff a little bit more like I already did about the fact it's like 70 degrees here and he's unseasonably warm right at freezing. So that's interesting. And we're going to talk about all types of stuff. And it's going to be one of these shows where we encourage questions, especially when we have guests on, because even with one eye, I can stay on track of what's going on. So you, in the live stream, you'll see a little scroller going down there on the bottom of the screen right now. It says, please put the word question. And you can infer from that also comment in all caps, and then put your comment, your question. Please do that in one sentence. I promise you, you can do it. And that way we'll know what you're actually asking and we'll be able to give you a good answer. If you don't do that, there's a good chance, even with the guests, that I will miss you and we will not get to your question during Q&A at the end. Any point along the way, don't hold the questions. Go ahead and stick them in there. If you have to leave, you can come back and watch the archive and those questions will be there for you. Answered. And remember, if you super chat me for any amount, even 99 cents or something like that with a super sticker, whatever the hell YouTube calls it, it'll automatically start itself and there'll be no way that we can miss you. With that, let's go ahead and recognize our sponsors of the day today. Sponsor today, number one today, is Above Phone. I just want to point something out that I think most of y'all know at this point, and that is that you're being spied on a daily basis. Your data is being collected on a daily basis. But did you know this? The people that made your phone, they're doing it. The people that make the apps that you use, they're doing it. Your carrier, they're doing it too. Everybody's in the game. Everybody's in the game of collecting your data, giving your data over to Uncle Sam, and selling your data to pretty much anybody that'll buy it. And on top of all this, we deal with a censored app store. There's apps that we might want to use that are censored, or there's apps that we want to use that we can't use because they have in-app purchases. There's all types of things. With Above Phone, you can make that all go away, and you can take your privacy back completely, your technology back completely, because they have the Above Phone, the Above Tablet, and the Above Book. And if you're like, I'm not sure I'll be able to use this new stuff, they have an expert. When you get your device, he'll spend an hour with you and help you onboard to your new device. And when I got my Above Book, there was videos on it that taught me how to do it anyway. So that was really great and good forethought. Next up today, much simpler product to understand because we all understand deliciousness. Biltong USA, that's from Anton Van Vuren. The real stuff, the real Biltong. Go on YouTube, or not YouTube, go on Amazon. Search for Biltong and look what you pay for a little tiny pack of shitty stuff. That, trust me, it isn't Biltong. If it's super dried out, it's not Biltong. Okay, it doesn't taste like jerky. It tastes like Biltong. And then go look what you can get a half pound to a pound for at Biltong USA. And I want to make a suggestion. If you've not tried them yet, try the Calabanasi sausages. These are a little bit different than the Drewors, which are a South African sausage. This is more of like a Middle Eastern thing. They've got a funk because they're fermented. They've got caraway seeds, which is just delicious. They're a little bit more old, you know, European, I guess, than African, but they are awesome. And check out the Biltong sticks, STIX. I just changed my standing every other week order with Anton from regular Biltong. So I've had so much of it for the past 2 years of the sticks. These are a little bit harder. They come in little thin strips. It's kind of what they do with the trimmings. And I advise you to take a pair of shears and just cut them into bite-sized pieces rather than trying to rip off that long grain. They're fantastic, and it's a different experience. So check it out today, because life is too short for average snacks. So go to Biltong USA, and when you get there and you click on shop, I just want you to realize there's a ton of other things from all over the world that Anton imports, some from South Africa, some from other places. And I think he just sent out a thing. I think he got to like the 15th in most of the United States to order today to get your stuff delivered before Christmas if you want to do that. With that, let's go ahead and welcome our special guest, Jeff. Man, did I get your last name right?
You nailed it.
Okay. It wasn't a hard one, but I hate when I do that, but I'm like, well, and they're like, well, actually, and you know, it's usually so, right. Somebody doing that's usually got like a 47 syllable name or something, and it's in like two different merged foreign languages. And you're like, well, bro, help phonetically spell it on your app. Then yours was pretty easy. But before we get into the main topic, can you start off with Jeff? Let's go back before any of this began. What was like your, like you got out of high school or college, and what was your profession before you even thought about doing this stuff?
I mean, it didn't really happen in that order. Like when I was in high school, my intent was to get out, because I lived in the suburbs outside of Vancouver.
Okay.
In British Columbia. And it was clear, like, you couldn't own land down there. You definitely couldn't hunt in your backyard or fish. And so I had kind of long intended to get out. But right after high school, I did go to tech school in electrical engineering technology, and that just cemented it. Like I commuted, you know, an hour each way or more in traffic. And every moment I was like, this is not for me. I'm getting out of here. And so, yeah, we moved to a remote small town as part of my first job. And then we've moved around British Columbia a little bit, and, yeah, it evolved into what we're doing here.
I get the whole not wanting to commute thing. I still live near a pretty big city, but I don't have to go out, you know, most of the time when other people are doing it, like I call them muggles now. And when I do occasionally either just forget that it's like high time or I have to go, I'm like, this sucks. Like you forget what it's even like after a while and you end up in real traffic. It's terrible.
One
of the better things about freeing yourself from the systems, right?
Yeah. And I mean, as much as I wanted to get out at that point, just like you're saying now, it's like, it's even worse than I remembered. Like, cause back then I was a bit conditioned, you know, you couldn't help but feel like it's pretty normal. Like everyone does this. And now that I don't, and I go back and I'm like, oh man,
there ain't nothing normal about it, right?
Yeah, no, it's not good.
Just cause it's common doesn't mean it's normal. Right. There's a lot of things people do that are common, but they're not normal. How did you get started down the path then off-grid homestead? Clearly it was a goal, but there's a point where things stop being a someday and they start being a now. Now, you don't necessarily go from 0 to 100, but you begin the actual process.
Well, land was my original intent. I just, you know, when I was 18, I was like, I'm going to get some land. And of course that took me to remote areas of the province, and you know, it was affordable there. You could actually buy 10 acres or whatever. And then once we bought our first, it was actually 5 acres, our first piece. And it had a little old, you know, mobile house on it that we fixed up. And our next property was 268 acres.
Oh,
and
wow.
it was off grid, because that's how you afford a big chunk of beautiful land, is if it's a little bit harder to get to or if it doesn't have power. And so at, you know, going off grid wasn't really my purpose. It was just that to get what I wanted, 268 acres with pasture and a view of the mountains and like loaded with elk and deer and like it had everything. It was just gorgeous. It just didn't have power.
Yeah.
And being a little bit like electrically educated, I was like, this is not a big deal. And that was back in 2007. And it was very expensive back then, like 10 times more expensive than now. But it was still doable.
That's crazy, because the cost of housing has gone up, while the cost of building an off-grid system for your house, at least from the electrical standpoint, has gone down. And it's what I'm always saying, that the natural state of society is actually one of deflation.
Right.
And technology is has so much inertia that it's the one thing that overcomes the artificial economic system that we've built.
You know? Solar panels were $7 to $8 per watt back then. And I mean, now if you buy in any quantity, like for a house or cabin, it's like 50 cents a watt, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like 16 times cheaper right now than it was just, 18 years ago.
I think one of the things that's come true that was predicted by a lot of future thinking folks go back 10 years was solar has actually become the cheapest form of power known to man. Unfortunately, storage has not followed as close on that declining cost. And it's storage that ends up being the bulk of the cost now.
Well, I mean, there's like big solar, which is like more of a policy and can be a political issue. But like when we're talking about small solar, like this is brilliant. You know what I mean? You can buy a 400 watt panel and it can power a cabin. Like that's it. Right. Like one panel for a couple $100. And like that just simply didn't exist throughout history, right? Like we have this energy source that is passive that just sits there. And the panels, like unless they get like some massive hailstorm, like the ones that were installed industrial and in the 70s and 80s, you know, the real early ones, like they're still out there. Like they're still working. Like this stuff lasts a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was saying. It's gotten to be where it's really only the storage side. We can get more in your system later, but just kind of occurs to me with what y'all have set up. Are y'all using generators at all to get in between any type of lean times when you don't have the same amount of sun or whatever? You're pretty far north. Your days have to be pretty daggone. My days are short right now. Yours have to be quite short.
Well, like right now in December on a beautiful sunny day like today, I don't have like perfect sun exposure. It's pretty decent, but I got some tall trees and whatever. And like I can get like 1 to maybe 2 hours of like full sun on a day like today. So like the equivalent of 1 to 2 hours of full sun. And really like the sun's not up very long. It's like up at 8, down at 3 type of thing. So in the wintertime, anytime where it's not full sun, and that's kind of the way the system is designed. Like you can design a system that doesn't need a generator, but it needs to be infinitely large to accommodate, 2 weeks without sun. So our system is designed that in the wintertime, it'll work fine. But as soon as we get like, 2 days of not sun, we run the generator for a couple hours.
Okay, that makes sense. I know a lot of people that have that same kind of, not exact same setup, but same approach. What was your motivation? I mean, you kind of said like you just wanted to. And, if you're a guy that likes to hunt and fish, who the hell hasn't? But was there any more to it than that?
Well, I mean, honestly, I think that most people, I do believe that the majority of people have a little bit of a primal urge for like open space, autonomy. They want to be able to have time for their family and for their friends and the things they want to do, which means they don't want to like work incessantly. And so, I mean, I think I just shared those really kind of, those same thoughts and ideologies as most people. And maybe the only difference was I just kind of acted on it early on. And so, one of the big things was, we got married really young. I turned 19 and 2 weeks later I got married.
Oh, wow.
And, 2 years later we had our first. And so, by 27, we had 5 beautiful girls. And so, Rose didn't, like, she just wanted to be a mother. Like, she didn't want to work. And living in the city, like, that's just, you have to work. You have to work in daycare or find people to watch kids. And so one of the big things was just lifestyle. And like, that's a major one, is Rose has been able to, raise the kids. And then eventually we homeschooled the kids. And like, we just participate in all of our activities together as a family, which has been what we wanted. And, I got like, we kind of like watch TV. I got these huge windows facing south and it's just the forest and birds and animals and the sky. And like, that's what I wanted. I didn't really want to be in a dark hole watching the TV of someone else's beautiful, you know, wilderness video. I wanted to like live in a wilderness video. So, I don't know. It just worked out that way. I mean, we made some decisions along the way. But it really turned into, it became we had a name for it. I called it my Freedom 35 plan. And like, once we started down this road, I'm like, man, I need to own land debt free, but not just land and debt free. I need to own land that's productive, and I want to be debt free. That's my goal. It's not freedom from working, but it's the freedom to work doing the things I want and when I want and not all the time and not because someone else needs me to or because I'm behind the eight ball. You know, I want to be productive because I'm a human and I want to be producing good things. And so, yeah, we eventually achieved Freedom 35. So we own this place debt free. It's productive. We hunt and fish around here, but it's also got, you know, our domestic animals and our gardens, and it's full of timber for fuel and for building. And of course, we collect rain and sun. And so regardless of the weather, we're harvesting.
Harvest some.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you say Freedom 35, what's the 35? Is that the age you wanted it done by? Is that what that was?
Yeah. Yeah. It started as a Freedom 25 plan when I was a little bit more, ambitious. And then I'd never thought about having children, obviously, when I was like 18 and 19.
Yeah.
And so, you know, children change things a little bit, and
children change everything for the good mostly, but they change You start like, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And God's like, you're going to have a kid.
So
nice that you have that plan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So we didn't abandon the plan though. We kind of adapted and pushed it out. And, yeah, of course it didn't happen exactly as we had imagined, but in some ways it turned out better. So, I like to encourage people. I'm like, I don't think we did anything special. We didn't start with anything special. We didn't start with a trust fund. You know, we didn't start with anything that most people don't, just a reasonable education. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've been able to live like, you know, like you said, like we're living like millionaires out here off grid. And it's not because we have millions of dollars, but we have the things that a millionaire would buy if they could. Right. Which is time to pursue, you know, common interests with friends and family, like just like a simpler life, like not kind of marching along at the tune to someone else's drum, you know.
I think a lot of times people need to understand it's not how much money you're earning. It's how much money you're able to put to the use that you want versus what you require. So you obviously don't have an electric bill. Sounds like the land's paid for. I don't know if there's any debt against the structure, but if that's gone, then you have property taxes, which where you live, I would imagine even in Canada, are probably very low. Unimproved. They don't do anything for you, so they only take a token of the flow. Like it's like the mafia guy that goes, this guy, I'm really not gonna extort this guy for protection, but you know, I'm gonna go in there's a little fruit stand and eat an apple every Monday. Right. Yep. And wet my beak is not a gangster set in the gangster movies. Right. You know, like I'm not going to take that, which I'm going to have. But whenever I come by, I'm going to grab a piece of fruit off the stand. So you have very low outgoing. Like you have to pay for is food. You're growing food. You're harvesting food. So that's mitigated. So then a modest income feels like a much higher level of income because you don't have the cost of living that the average person does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can. I try and tell some of my friends and family in town this. I'm like, guys, like, I don't think you understand like how wealthy you are when you get rid of, you know, a $2,000 a month mortgage and, you know, $500 a month of house insurance and $500 a month in property tax. And like just that alone, $3,000 a month of after tax money. Is crazy because up in Canada, that's like earning $5,000. Well, if you previously had $500 of expendable income and now you have $5,000, it's like you're 10 times wealthier on the same income.
Yeah.
No, so, I mean, it's outrageous. Here's a good example. Like up here, professional hunting, like guide outfitting is a, you know, it's common. BC is absolutely phenomenal. Like the big game up here is incredible. And so people will come here and they'll pay like $10,000 at a minimum to hunt like a moose, and $100,000 to $150,000 to hunt a stone sheep. And it's like, I live right here.
So
you think in terms of like, maybe hunting a stone sheep. I mean, maybe $150,000 is crazy, but like, at least it's like $10,000-$20,000 just to hunt them. And I can buy a $50 tag and do it if I have the time. And so if I can, if I'm living a lifestyle where I can take a week or two and go sheep hunting, like with my friends or family, I'm like, I'm wealthy.
So everybody else is, everybody else doing it has to be.
And
I mean, that you can't afford to do. That's one of the most expensive hunts. If it might be the most expensive hunt in North America, not just stone sheep, but the big four, the bighorn, the desert, the stone sheep and the Dow, like all four of those are, you know, millionaire hunts. They really are. I mean, you know, if you know someone that has a slam, they're a multimillionaire or I don't know, their rich uncle bought it for them or something.
It's and we have a, we've got a river that is by here. So we can, you know, we cut a trail down there through Crown land, which is just like government land and we can all just access it. And, you know, so we have a trail, we walk like 20 minutes down to the river and there's a little beach and the river is like lovely for swimming in and you can catch fish in there. And, you know, if we can walk down there on an afternoon and throw out a towel and lay on a beach in the summertime, and then you lay there and you're like, people in the city can't do this. Like we have a, it's private. It's like a 40 acre private beach. There's no one, like zero people. You have it all to
it's
yourself.
It's private, but it's not, anybody could be there, but no one has.
But they're not. So we have access to it for $0. And because we have the time, like the flexibility in our life to go down there and enjoy it, you're like, man, this is worth a lot. Like, what is this? What would someone pay to just be able to, you know,
to do it for a week?
Yeah, like, and not, we can do this every day.
Like, to do it for a week, right? So, how do you earn money where you're at? Like, you, you went to school for electrical stuff, and that probably was beneficial as you were building your off-grid system. I'm sure it was, though. I would also say that I've known enough people to do it that the average person with an IQ, you know, around 100 or higher can figure this stuff out. But I'm guessing there's not a ton of work for an electrical specialist where you are.
Well, so the niche that I got into was utility power systems. And so I got my start in the public utility up here in BC, and I worked there as an employee for 10 years. That was how I started. But after 10 years, and that was kind of like coinciding with, we were already living here off grid with no bills, no mortgage. And it, it allowed me to kind of take the risk of quitting. And I had five little girls and a wife that didn't work. So I was 100% breadwinner. But, you know, as an employee, I was like, man, this is like, this is just not working for me. I mean, I knew it coming for a long time. I was a little bit maybe too independent minded. I'm like, I'd like to be I'd like to be independent. I'd like a, the opportunity to like do more. And so I quit and became, you know, started my own corporation and started contracting, doing similar work. And so since then, that's been about 15 years. And so there was periods of time where like I worked more than full time and I would travel around to different projects, large projects. And my whole family would come with and, you know, we'd homeschool the girls in a rented house or a hotel room for months at a time. And we actually got to explore a lot of tremendous areas. It was a really fun time. And then eventually, you know, there came a time where I just didn't need to work full time anymore. And the girls were getting older and we could spend more time with them. And so 6 years ago, I actually kind of got out of like full time work. And so for 6 years, I do a little bit of work contracting, and some of it I can do just from here on a computer, and some of it I can travel to a site. But the reality is I could work a quarter time right now. And because of my low costs, I can live like just as reasonable as any of my peers. But that gives me three quarter time to like pursue interests. And you know, like we've got this YouTube channel that, you know, for 9 years we've been making that. There's no way it could pay me back for the amount of time I've put into that. But I've done that for fun. Like, I just wanted to share stories. I get a kick out of it. I didn't monetize it for like 6 years. It didn't pay a single penny. And so, you know, I can do that. I can do that when I have time. And again, hunting and fishing, spending time with all the girls before they get too big and they're all gone, you know, has been a big priority the last few years.
Gotcha. Now, the one thing you did do is you wrote a book on all this.
Yeah.
And in the show notes, I'll have a link where people can get over to it. But it's called Gridlessness, Finding Freedom Off Grid. And it's kind of your story, I guess, right?
It is. Yeah, it's the backstory to, you know, the YouTube channel. Because people can see kind of what we've been doing for the last 9 years. But a lot of people wonder, like, how did you get there? Like, what, you know, what did you do? Like, and the pessimistic people are like, oh, you had a trust fund. And, you know, it's like, no, we're just like normal people, high school sweethearts. And we just made like intentional decisions. And yeah, so I tell like a lot of fun stories in there, like some successes and failures.
Yeah.
And I also talk about the financial, like our finances. I get into a lot of detail. It's pretty transparent about, you know, mistakes we made financially, but also successes we had financially. And I talked about different properties that we purchased and all kind of like a lot of the technical things about, you know, water, wells, rainwater and electrical power and, you know, starting a vehicle when it's minus 40 outside and, you know, kind of a lot of like the nuts and bolts of an off-grid homestead.
There is some interesting things you learn living in the North. I never lived quite as far as north as you did, but central PA in the winters, especially the 80s, got really cold. And I remember one time using a little like butane torch to heat my car key.
Oh, yeah.
And stick it in the lock in the car. And yeah. I had to do it like four times. So the lock defrosted enough to, you know, this is before buttons and whatnot.
Yeah.
You had two keys to one car, the door key and the ignition key, and had to use the heated door key to get the door open.
Yeah.
I was amazed the car started after I got into it. It did, you know, 70 cars were built a little different than today. So,
and when you finally get rolling, like the tires are a little bit lumpy, like they're a little
on
one side.
No, it's like you pull out and you hear it like break anchor.
It's
frozen to the ground. There's some things I miss about the North. That is not one of them. But you know, you think you probably don't want my August either, though. I mean, that's the other side of it, right?
Like, right.
You know, people. I post pictures of things like scorpions and black widows and rattlesnakes and shit. People are like, "This is where why I live, where the air hurts my face." Because I don't have any of those things here, you know.
Yeah, there's not too many creepy crawly things up here, that's for sure. It's pretty sterile, actually.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about the winter up here, it just kills everything.
Yeah.
You know, or things migrate. I mean, we should migrate. Last few years, we have been migrating in the wintertime, driving down through your western states.
Yeah. Yeah, and that actually is not a bad way to live. There's, no matter where you live, unless it's like Cuenca, Ecuador or something like that, there is some time of the year where it's either too hot or too cold. And birds seem to have it figured out really well, you know, especially the ones we don't eat. And no one shoots you on the way of your migration if you're, you know, a crackle or something like that. But if you're a dove, you might have a problem. So how self-sufficient are you guys really? It sounds like the answer is very.
59%.
Okay.
Okay. I made a video on this.
Not many people have an exact number.
Well, because it's an awesome question that everyone wants to know. So I actually made a video last year, I think, on like, okay, how off grid are we? Like, how self-sufficient are we? And I came up with a little scoring system.
Okay.
And I based it on energy, food, and water, and I put like not a category, but like kind of like a bonus or a criteria, which was debt. So like the financial system. So how free are you from energy, like energy infrastructure, the food system, you know, city water and and the banking system. And so I scored ourselves and I came up at 59%, and no one's argued any different, but it gives you an idea that, like, I would say we're actually very self-sufficient compared to most people.
Okay.
However, we're like, you know, this is a logarithmic scale. If you wanted to get to 100% self-sufficient, you are a caveman. Like, if you really don't want to rely on anything made or produced by another person, like, you are a caveman.
Yeah.
And you are foraging. And I mean, none of us actually want that.
I mean, you're talking to me right now. So you have a computer. The electricity might be free, but you had to get that. For you to be able to talk to me, you can't, like, put your fingers in your ears and imagine. You have to have internet access. We've already discussed the fact that when the sun is not as shining as it is on other parts of the year, you have a generator, so something you can't run that on a jelly bean field. So there are things you have to import, right?
Sure. So COVID was very interesting in the spring of 2020. We started getting phone calls from friends and family being like, yeah, if it gets any crazier, haha, like, we'll be coming to your place. And I started thinking, I'm like, yeah, if I was in their position, I would too.
Yeah.
But it made me evaluate, like, how prepared are we for like, in that case, of course, it was like massive disruption. Like, maybe you couldn't buy fuel. Maybe you couldn't buy food. Maybe you couldn't work and make money. Like, you know, it was a pretty big disruption pending or potentially. Yeah. And so, you know, and since then I've put lots of thought into this too. And the reality is, if you're homesteading, and especially if you're an off-grid homestead, by nature of a homestead, like, for throughout history, people had to store stuff. So you would grow 800 or 1,000 pounds of potatoes, and then you would store it for the rest of the year, right? You would shoot big game animal and you would store it somehow so that you could eat it all year round. And, you know, even with the power system, like, we store daily solar energy and batteries, but we also have jerry cans of fuel so that, you know, we can go months potentially. Right. So yeah, in one sense, it's like, yeah, we're not, I mean, we rely on tons of stuff, but we don't totally need it. Like, we don't need it today. We don't need it tomorrow. Yeah. And I think, honestly, if you, if there was like a reality TV show and they were offering like $10 million and said, how long could you go without any contact? Man, I'd enter that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, cause we have months worth of stuff right now. Like, we would obviously have to change. Like, we wouldn't be buying the fresh fruits and vegetables and whatnot, but that's way better. And this is how I would encourage people, is like, just be more self-sufficient than you are now.
Yeah.
Like, if you look around and you're like, man, without power, without water, without being able to get any food, they would not necessarily die, but go crazy with fear and, you know, within a day or two. And I mean, fear is the enemy. So you don't want to be in a position where you're like, I'm going to die or my family's going to die. And we're just not in that position. Like, back in spring of 2020, I'm like, man, whatever.
I don't care.
You guys can go crazy in town. We'll be fine. Yeah. Let me know when you all settle down.
I'm 20 minutes from Fort Worth, one of the biggest cities in the country, and I didn't give a shit either. I mean, it's setting your life up in certain ways when society goes sideways. As long as nobody comes where you are, you're on a different wavelength from the rest of society. You've separated, you know, not just geographically, but mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And what you're hitting on there too is, I've always taken two terms that people tend to use interchangeably and separated them for the purpose of planning, not just to be like one of those guys, like a nerd at a sci-fi convention asking about conflict in episodes or something, but self-reliance and self-sufficiency, I've always separated. And self-reliance, I've always said, is a function of time. How long can you go? That's your self-reliance. And then what percentage you can exist almost in perpetuity with, or for multiple years, that's your self-sufficiency. So I like that you did it in percentage. And what I mean by that is, let's say you had somebody and they live on grid, but they have a solar array and battery backup for it and all. And when they do the math, they're producing 60% of the energy that they actually use on an ongoing basis. Well, then to me, they are 60% self-sufficient for their power needs, right? And they're depending on the grid for 40% of them. But that 60% might be enough to go a year, because what we want and what we need are very different, and there's different cycles to be in, and what is a need today might become a want tomorrow. Like, if you truly need it and you don't have it, you're dead. Now, that doesn't mean that I want to do without it when I don't have to, right? So having that delineation between self-reliance is, if I have a flashlight and it's got, I got 10 sets of batteries with it, and that'll last me, a month, then I have a month of self-reliance. Where if I have, again, that solar array that gives me 50% of my power, I'm 50% self-sufficient, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it is hard to gauge. And, you know, if you said, hey, like, it's an apocalypse, you're simply trying to survive, that's why I'm so confident. I'm like, well, we will survive along with the most prepared people out there.
Yeah.
Not because, I mean, just by nature of the old kind of lifestyle of homesteading, like you have seeds from last year's garden. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
you have a root cellar full of potatoes. So, you know, you have hopefully like a lifetime supply of ammunition so that you could hunt, you know, for decades. And those things, I don't know. I mean, it is a difficult topic, because what are we talking about? Are we talking about an apocalypse? Or are we talking about just having a good lifestyle right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we've had some pretty bad shit happen in the world. If you're planning for the apocalypse, you're probably going to be disappointed. Everybody that ever followed some, you know, modern day prophet out into a field to wait was, you know, some of them took it really bad and off themselves when it didn't happen.
Yeah.
If you're old enough, if you're younger than me, but you might still remember the Heaven's Gate cult. Out in California, they thought one of the comets, I think it was Hale-Bopp, the Hale-Bopp comet, was going to be surfing in behind the comet. And when it didn't show up, they all went Jim Jones themselves. So I think I've always tried to steer people away from this planning for the apocalypse or whatever. Even in some of the places that went really bad, Bosnia, Argentina, right? We had Professor CJ on about, you know, Ireland during the Troubles, Europe during the World Wars. Like, there was still some semblance of society there, and the more you didn't need it, the better off you were.
Yeah.
And so reducing the need is the balance. Like, and I love the way you did it. I mean, honestly, in that respect, you're ahead of me. I could write a check right now and pay for my property. I won't, because I have a 2.5% mortgage. And if I couldn't make 2.5% of my money, I don't deserve it. but I'll never escape property taxes that I pay here.
Right.
I really miss my Arkansas property. My property taxes were so low, that when we got the mortgage on the property, they enhanced our, escrow, because they didn't believe it. Right. The lender didn't believe there was a such thing as $280 a year in property taxes. They thought that was monthly or something, and we pushed back, and they still jacked like a couple $1,000 in our escrow. And for like the 10 years we owned it, we'd pay for 2 years, build this huge escrow, they'd refund it and overcompensate. And then, you know, then we get a bill for a couple $100 and they jack it back up. So I can't escape that. Ever. No matter, I can put in all the off-grid stuff. The property tax thing is a real, and what's beautiful is a lot of times when you do what you did, and I don't know the tax system in Canada, but down here, since there's no grid service, no matter what you do to that property, it's never going to be considered improved. It's going to be lowest rung of the tax system.
Right, right. Yeah, and, you know, there's another nuance here that I think is worthwhile for people to think about, because I thought about this for like a decade, and I get lots of questions. And that is, you know, what really is off-grid? Like, we think about the power grid. Everyone understands that. But I would say, and this is actually comes from my perspective as kind of a specialist in utility power systems, I would say the problem with the grid is that if the grid truly fails in a very large way, you and a group of neighbors can't fix it. Mm. Like it takes, it's kind of like an all of government type of action to coordinate like the recreation of a grid, right? Yeah. So the problem is that means you're reliant on something that you have zero control over. Like, if, you know, on a more common thing, if they like, double the prices, like you just take it. Right.
That's kind of what happened about 3.5 years ago under Joe Biden down here. Also, our electric bill didn't quite double, but it went up by about 70% overnight.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's not the only thing, though. So other things that you can't fix is like food supply. Like if you're in a city and that food network that's coming like globally.
Yeah.
We saw that disrupted in COVID. And it's like, man, you're not going to fix that. Like, you're not just going to like phone a farmer 1,000 miles away and be like, can I get a piece of beef? Right. So if you're reliant on like that food system, I'm like, that's a grid too. Like, we should consider being off grid, like try and reducing reliance on things that like are so big and so impossible for me to affect or improve or change or fix. And what we should do, because we can't be self-reliant 100% without being cavemen, we should become more reliant on things that we can affect, like neighbors. Like if you can buy some food from a neighbor, like it build that relationship, right? So rely on yourself more, rely on your neighbors and your community more, and reduce your reliance on these things that you have no effect over.
Agreed. Was it a struggle to raise kids in the woods? They want things you couldn't give them, or get, I'm bored, or was living in the woods actually a kind of a solution to that?
Man, I mean, raising the kids out here was like a huge part of it. And I would say, no, it was better. It was better out here. And the reason is if, like, I kind of know the two worlds. Like, I know the world where parents work and their kids, once they start going to school, like we become minority shareholders in our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I know that's most people's reality. So I'm not being too hard on you, but like when we were at that point, when our oldest was about to go to school, we just didn't feel right about it. We're like, man, like she's five. And I'm like,
yeah,
once she gets on the bus, and for us, we weren't on this property, but we were on our first off-grid property, and you know, she was going to be on the bus for an hour. Then she's going to be on a bus for an hour on the way home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, and a kid who's five sleeps for 12 hours. And you're like, at 5 years old, we're giving up majority influence on our kid. And me and Rose both went to normal schools. Like we kind of know what that thing was like, at least in the 80s and 90s. And so we just didn't feel right about it. We're like, I don't know. Like she can just stay here. Like how hard is it to teach a five-year-old like to start reading and writing? So we did. And it was kind of new to us, and we thought homeschooling was weird at that time, but we're like, let's just do it this year and see what happens. And we started doing that every year, and every year we're like, yeah, let's do it next year. And at a certain point, we're just like, oh my goodness, we are not going back. Like for so many reasons. One was lifestyle, just for the whole family. We weren't tied to the school schedule. We could hunt all fall, and we did, and we'd harvest, and just, they would help and work. And I started realizing, like, I have so many teachers in my family, and some of them and some other teachers are like, you realize that, like, a school is trying to emulate what you're doing with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of one-on-one, or, like, you know, two parents and five kids, you know, doing stuff together is the best way for them to learn, like, practical skills. And if you're, like, a little bit intentional, which we were, you know, we'd incorporate math wherever we could. We'd have them write and read things on their own, like, you know, read the instructions, try and put that thing together. And so as far as the education thing, which I can get all fired up about that, but I think our kids, yes, was very different than the normal kids, and that was probably a benefit, because I don't think we need more kids with like the same normal education.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it's way better for kids to have like a broad perspective and a variety. And of course they still completed like the requirements. Like they still did the stuff. They still got their diploma, which is like a provincial diploma up here. And as far as like just their lifestyle, obviously there's struggles with any kids, but like the struggles we had, you know, they might be around chores. Like they definitely had some more chores than someone in town, more than I did when I was a kid. And, you know, just like any kid, maybe they would like be unhappy with that one day or something. But on the other side, like our friends in town, like, man, they had big struggles with their kids, you know, into middle school and high school being sucked into like apps on their phones. Like, first of all, they had to have a phone.
Yeah.
And then they had to have this app. And then the parents look into the app and then they're like, this app is terrible. Like, it's totally terrible for kids. Like, it's exploitive. But like, yeah. So now you're trying to parent your kid, but you're not, you know, the kid's kind of rightfully being like, well, you put me in this school with all these friends, and the only way for me to communicate with them is through this app on this phone. So if you take it away, then, you know, you're making me an outsider in my amongst my peers. It's a super hard position for the parents. And anyways, we avoided all that. Like the kids just were, they have lots of friends, and because we've traveled, they've got them around the province, and, you know, they've got friend groups, but they are not the way, they're not like, they're more family centric than friend centric.
Yeah.
Than most kids their age, like teens, the teenage years, which I think is good.
Yeah. I think one of the things about living your way, you tend to have more kids. You've got five girls. What about what everybody always brings up, socialization? And I mean, for us, it was easy. We had the grandkids here for years doing homeschooling, and, you know, their parents just put them into various activities, you know, the granddaughter gymnastics and softball, my grandson baseball, and other we did archery and all kinds of stuff with them, and that got them out associating with other kids. So to me, that's not that hard. It sounds like you have similar opportunities, even though you're way out in the yonder. To me, a lot of times when people say that, it's like, well, what are you even talking about? Because first thing you tell kids in school is shut up, sit down, don't talk to anybody. You're not here to socialize. And then you say they need to be socialized. So what does that mean? They get to talk for a few minutes in between classes and at lunch? Like, and what I think it really means in most of the modern system is domesticated, right? The way we domesticate an animal, we want to make sure that they're nice and compliant and respect authority and show up on time and do what they're told and sit down when the bell rings, which teaches you how to, you know, punch a clock and get in and out of a factory, which there almost ain't no work left like that anyway. It's a legacy system. So, I mean, how do you feel about all that?
Yeah, that was obviously the most considered question that we got when we started, was like, oh yeah, we got to make sure they're socialized. And eventually we realized we would respond with like, what do you mean? Like, are you suggesting that sending my kid to like a school with hundreds of unparented children running around in mobs and like little gangs and cliches and like with bullies and like some people bully and some people withdraw and some people like they're just trying to survive a very difficult social situation with like very little parental, you know, teacher oversight. You think that's like a good way to socialize a kid? Because it's not. Yeah. The answer is no. That's not how you socialize a kid. Also, think about after your school years. When in life is it like that again?
Never.
When are you ever lumped into a huge group of peers who are all immature and developing?
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully after you're 18, that's not the case anyways. But, you know, immature, developing, 30 peers, one teacher.
Yeah.
And even if they are exceptional, man, I got five kids. And so with two parents and five kids, you're outnumbered a lot. Like it's hard to like be directing and parenting and teaching. So 1 to 30 is impossible, right? And we know that what happens is the troublemakers get all the attention because they're trying to stop them from throwing things and yelling and swearing and stuff like that. And like, you know, the bright kids don't get challenged and the regular kids just get totally overlooked. And so that's not a normal, like in college, it's not like that. People are grouped all sorts of different ages and from all sorts of different areas, but they're grouped by interest or at least program and course, right? And in the workforce, it's nothing like you know, 30 people your same age grouped only by age, not by interest, not by skill, not by.
Yeah.
So it's like you're training them in a bad social arena for a situation that will never exist in their life.
Yeah. It's,
and what we came to realize about homeschooled kids, and we started to appreciate in our own kids, was that they related to people of all ages. Like if we got together with another family, they could have fun and play with kids a lot younger, and they could be like the cool older kid, right?
Yeah.
They weren't like too cool for that. And likewise, they could relate to the adults. If another family, whatever, we interacted and it was just adults, they could hold a conversation with adults. And that's actually the unique social skill of, I would say, like that should be the goal of a homeschooled kid.
Yeah.
Don't just learn to socialize with like people your same age. Socialize with everyone in the appropriate way.
Well, I mean, if you ask entrepreneurs all the way to psychologists, do you become more like the people you associate with? The answer is always yes. I mean, it's part of business because you want to associate with successful people because you'll become more successful because you'll be more like them in some way. And, you know, psychologists will tell you that you are the combination of the five people you spend the most time with, et cetera. So if you take a 10-year-old and you surround him with other 10-year-olds, they're perpetually 10 until they're 11. There's no stretch, right? There's none because your peers are all fellow 10-year-olds picking their boogers and eating them. That's now your standard, right?
Yeah.
Where if we stretch you and you have to kind of come up to be able to interact with, teenagers and adults, then you become more like them. Likewise, so you said you get stretched into getting along with the younger kids because there's a whole skill set in that. Like trying to reason with a 5-year-old will push the limits of what you're capable of doing. Like I'd rather negotiate with 12 people around a boardroom that are all really sharp than try to negotiate with 5 5-year-olds about what's going on the top of a pizza. That is a mastery of diplomacy if you can make that work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and so I throw that one right back at people, and I would encourage anyone who's thinking of homeschooling, do it. You're the parents. Like, you can homeschool your kid better than the school can, and you don't need to be a teacher. Like, the reality is you have all the – you know, this isn't 100 years ago. Like, we have access to all the academic – documents and training materials you could possibly need. And, you know, I think if you are considering it, it means you probably want to invest a lot in your children, and then you should do it.
Yeah.
And when we first started, we actually had someone, I told the story in the book because it was a real milestone for us. And we had someone come into our life very briefly, just for a day or two. And we had this deep conversation and he's like, if you don't feel it's right to send your kid to school, then like, why are you? And I'm thinking like, yeah, I came up with a whole bunch of excuses why I shouldn't. Like, oh, I don't know how to homeschool. I think that might be weird, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, like you just told me you think it is best for your kid to stay at home and for you to keep parenting. And then you told me that you're not going to do it. And I'm like, man,
you're right.
I felt really convicted. And I'm sure glad that conversation happened because, in hindsight, so we've had 5 girls. The youngest two just finished grade 12 this past year. In fact, they finished it in 1 month.
Hmm.
I mean, it almost sounds illegal, but like we traveled south this winter, and long story a little bit short is I've been still recovering from this back injury. I couldn't do much. So I was kind of like laying on the sand for a month, almost 2 months. And I wrote the book and I raced the girls. Cause I'm like, tell you what, I'm going to write this book and you guys should finish grade 12, like right now. And we raced. And in 31 days I wrote the book and they both finished grade 12.
Wow.
Like they just gave her like 50, 60 hours a week, like an adult would when they had an important job to do.
Yeah.
And they got it done. Like it's unreal. What they can
and
get
the
done
thing is they got it
month.
Done, but these kids are spending more than that already anyway because they're coming home with 2 to 3 hours worth of freaking homework. And I remember when my son was in school and you talked to the teacher about it, well, I only give like 30 minutes of homework a day. But he has six other classes, Dornov, yeah. And you're a math teacher. You can't figure this out.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's kind of undefensible on an academic standpoint how long kids are in schools.
Yeah.
Like, it's only defensible when you think about it as a government-supported economic measure to babysit children.
Correct. We need them in school long enough that the parents only have to worry about an hour or two of the day. But, and once they're a certain age, well, they can go with a friend, they can go to grandma's, they can go home, be a latchkey kid like we all were in the 80s. And what could go wrong? And the only reason you guys don't know what could go wrong in the 1980s is we didn't have digital cameras. If we had digital cameras, I think Gen X would be known as the dumbest generation that ever existed. Yeah. Like, we never ate Tide Pods. I'm not going to say we never did anything dumber than that. But there's no evidence. And yeah. We're all sworn to secrecy with each other. Like, it's a death pact. We will not tell of the stories of what happened until it's funny. Can you describe what a typical day in the life of living off grid on your homestead is like? What is normal for you guys?
Sure. Well, and that has changed over the years, right? Like, there was a time where we worked a lot and we were trying to like make money and, you know, be successful as an independent business. But in the last 6 years, I'll do a little bit of contract work, you know, maybe on the computer. And we have the girls go out and do a few chores in the morning. We've got domestic animals, right? We raise chickens, ducks, pigs. We just butchered our steer calf. So we've had a milking cow the last couple of years, and we had milking goats before that. And, you know, Rose does a lot of work in the garden all summer. So she'll always do that for a few hours. And then, I mean, I don't know. We pursue our projects. Like, with our YouTube channel, we're always working on something. The house is pretty, like, our actual chores related to being off grid compared to a normal house, I'll say, are once in a while, like in the winter, we start the generator. So that takes like 2 minutes. We do heat and cook with wood.
Okay.
We have a Blaze King wood stove to heat. And we have an old McClary wood cook stove that Rose loves. And so that's probably the biggest single like daily chore is we split and carry wood in the house. Mm-hmm. And since I've had this back injury for like 2 years, the girls have done that 100%. Like, they've literally split all the firewood, cords of firewood for the last couple winters. And then we also we only have rainwater, and we have it in the shop. It collects on the shop roof. We got some tanks under the floor, and they go out there and they fill 2 20-gallon or 5-gallon jugs, 20-liter jugs, and carry them in the house. And that's what we pour in the sink to do dishes, and we pump up into a little tank to have a shower. And so we carry water in and out, and that's 10 minutes a day, you know? I mean, that's kind of it. The domestic animals, you know, we feed them. So maybe an hour, someone's out there and they collect eggs and they feed something and then they feed another thing. And
Yeah,
I don't know. And then we keep busy. I mean, really, we're very seasonal. So like in the fall, we're hunting. Like, we're kind of hunting and harvesting nonstop.
Okay.
Even starting in August, you know, we're out there picking huckleberries. And we went on a couple hunting trips in August. Normally, we go on some fishing trips in August out to the ocean. And
then in August.
In August this year, we went sheep hunting and we went goat hunting. Kezia ended up getting her first mountain goat in August. And then, yeah, of course, in September, we're hunting elk and deer and moose and all those things. And then we're also butchering our pigs, and, you know, and then we do all our own cutting and wrapping. So we kind of slaughter it and butcher it. And, you know, and then there's firewood stuff. And then in the wintertime, I mean, historically, I would maybe take on more work and the girls would dig into school for a few dark months in the winter. But now life is changing. The girls are done school. So they're actually all working kind of on their own businesses. And the last 3 years, we've actually been driving south down through you know, Utah, Idaho, Arizona, and then down into Baja, Mexico, and get some sun and some vitamin D down there.
You're snowbirding.
Spearfish. I guess so, but I actually can more consider just we're migrating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, it just only makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I tell my friends up here, I'm like, you realize God made, like, the southern U.S. and Baja for us to go to, right? Like, like he didn't create them and then be like, but not you guys. You guys stay up here where it's frozen and terrible.
Yeah.
Like, we're allowed to go there, and it's pretty great. And I've actually realized the health benefits of it. Like, if you're kind of stuck indoors and it's dark, you're not getting sunshine. Like, everyone around you is kind of getting a cold or a flu. And then we've been going down wearing shorts and getting sunshine, and it's like no one's getting sick. Like, we're all, like, healthier and more active. So, and then you look back even, like, a couple hundred years, and it's like, well, that's what people did up here, man. Like,
yeah,
they hunted in the highlands and picked berries in the summer, and then they moved to the ocean or went south for the winter. Like, the Métis over in, you know, Manitoba, I don't know what that is, North Dakota area. But, you know, they came down into, like, central, I don't know, south central U.S. chasing bison a couple hundred years ago.
Yep.
Because that's where the bison went in the winter.
Yep.
So, I mean, it kind of makes sense. It's just not typical anymore with, like, the factory, you know, in the Industrial Revolution, everyone just, like, stayed put and worked in a factory year-round. But throughout human history, it was pretty normal to move around.
Yeah, for human history, most of the period, you know, we've been around for at least 350,000 years, and that number keeps getting moved back as all the experts that were sure they knew go, oh, we were wrong. We were anchored to our lifestyle. Now we're anchored to our careers. Like that's the big switch that happened. Even when we had towns and cities and villages, people still just went where it made sense for them to go. And a lot of times it was even work that led them there. Right. And, yep. But now you have like this idea that you work for a company, which means, and I'm not against jobs or anything, but it means they own you. At least they own part of you.
Right.
They pay for it. But I paid for a lot of things that I own. I own this pistol, but I paid for it, right? So they're basically renting part of your life essence when they pay you. And again, I'm not even saying it's all bad. I'm just saying it's what it is. And that's why we end up so sedentary. And I don't mean like we don't get up and exercise. I mean, we don't leave. We stay in the same place all the time. And I don't think that's the historic norm. I think that man is a wanderer by our nature.
Yeah.
Like that's how people got here. Right. Regardless of who's right of what the first settlers were and where they came from. We got here because we're like, I wonder what's over there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too hot or too cold here, but I wonder what it's like over there. Let me go find out. Hey, look at that big ass animal we eat going that way. Maybe we should go see where he's going. Right.
Yeah.
Look at that big ass ocean. I wonder if there's anything out there. Let's find out. That's humanity. That's who we're explorers. We're trying to go to freaking Mars. We already know there's nothing really there. But we're so arrogant. We're like, we'll make something there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so I think that is our nature to move around like that.
Yeah. And I think this is like the golden age of being able to do what you want. If you want to be autonomous, if you want to find freedom, like we did in some way, like one is you can go off grid way cheaper and easier now. You do not need to be an expert to figure out an off-grid system. You have Starlink. Like, we're doing this on Starlink right now. And believe me, before this, we tried all the internets possible, and they were all terrible. And now it's like you can work out here, and you can live out here, communicate with your family. So that's pretty new. That's like a new opportunity for people. It's like this is way easier to live somewhere else. And then if that's somewhere else, if you could buy land for like a tenth the price, like think about it. That's like a whole new lifestyle for you. That's like a whole new level of wealth for you if you spend a tenth on your land. And then also like the ability to work remotely is obviously fairly recent, but also the ability to work, I'll say like part-time, like if you don't need to work full-time and you're like, oh, maybe I only need to work half-time. Is it possible that I could take work over here part-time?
Yeah.
And then, you know, travel to work. So maybe I could even live in a place that doesn't actually have the work there and say you're not a remote worker, like a laptop worker or whatever. Like tons of people up here work in camps. They work in oil and gas. They work in a mine, and they travel in and out. They can actually live wherever they want. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like that would be hard with kids, but if you only have to do it a quarter time or half time or whatever, like, I just think there's tons of opportunities for people. Like,
yeah.
Don't say no right away. Just imagine what is possible, and there's a lot of options.
I think one of the things is people don't realize the value of something if they've never lived without it or had to contend with the fact that they wouldn't have it if they were somewhere else. What I mean by that, when you mentioned Starlink, I've been on this property for about 13 years now. There was no Starlink 13 years ago. I can tell you the house that I would live in today, if Starlink existed then, wouldn't be this one. It would be about 60 miles south of me. And it was an amazing house, and we had the money. It was completely affordable. My property taxes would be much lower. It was 10 acres instead of three. It had a huge farm behind it, and the guy that was selling the house owned the farm and said, we're never even there. Like, it's kind of like plant, like you're there to plant and to harvest type of farm, like that kind of an operation. I could have been hunting in the backyard, could have put in five ponds instead of no ponds. It would have been fantastic. I couldn't get good internet, and I can't run my business without it.
Yeah.
And today, a property like that would have been a no-brainer. I'm like, sure, yeah, I'll buy it. Yeah. And so the fact that you can put in solar for probably 20% of what it was 15 years ago, and you can get internet in a place where there wasn't an option, because they said, well, get dish internet or whatever. Not for this right here. Right.
Yeah.
There's a distance. There's something called latency. And when it takes three seconds for shit to get to one side and 3 seconds to get back. And then when the dish goes out, they're like, well, you ain't supposed to be running a business on it anyway.
Yeah.
It worked fine for watching videos on YouTube. It worked fine for sending email, browsing the web, stuff like that. It was fine for it. But when it broke, we went 3 weeks.
Wow.
Before it got fixed. Right. And I can't not run my business for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You know? So the fact that you can get internet literally anywhere now, that's an asset people aren't using as much as they should, I think.
Oh, it's a game changer. And I hope that it encourages people to, and if they like want to get out, if they want to go crazy off grid, kind of like we did, or just a little bit more rural, a little bit, you know, of a homestead or a little bit more where they can produce their own food, even a space with a garden. Like, yeah, you can do it. Like that, it really is a big game changer having the Starlink. And that's really just been 2 years now.
And the two of them together, the solar and the Starlink together, are amazing. I remember we used to have this guy used to hang out in the community named Steve Harris, and he was really smart, but he was kind of an asshole to people. And I eventually had to say, you can't be around here anymore, but he was friggin' smart as shit. But he's also one of those people, because of that, he thought he knew everything. Right. And so he was like, you know, you can really never get solar to pay for itself that fast. And we have another guy who's an electrical and specifically solar engineer in the community. He's like, I can make a property pay for itself the day I install it. And of course, Steve's like, no, you can't. He's like, yes, I can. Here's how it works. You take two properties, one's off grid and one's on grid. And you look at the cost of the on-grid property, and you look at the cost of the off-grid property. And the off-grid property is a fraction. I put a solar array on that property and set that person up where they have power sufficient to their needs. And the entire property with the solar system still costs less than the on-grid property.
Yeah.
And it was one of the few times in my life I ever saw that man go, all right, you got me beat.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's nothing to say to that except, yeah, you're right. And that was at a time, you know, we're going back 10, 12 years. That is at a time when the cost of doing that was a lot more than it is today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those two together. Other than that, what we've been kind of hitting on, what is your advice to others that want to do more like what you've done? Because, you know, it's easy to say something. It's way easier to say something than do it. It's easier to draw a picture of it on a whiteboard than to do it. Come up with good ideas all the time. And once it's done, it always looks easy, but it's never easy while you're doing it.
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is like we had a real decision point in our life where, I mean, I, I, I can't tell you all the backstory, but we ended up with two properties. And this one that we have, and that first off-grid property, it was like our dream property, 268 acres, just like crawling with elk and whitetails and mule deers. Anyways, but like we hung on to it, even though we'd kind of moved, life had taken us around, and we're like, maybe one day we'll move back, right? It's a beautiful property. But in the meantime, it was kind of rented. And we realized that like over time, we're like, you know, because we had a mortgage on it, and we're like, it was very apparent. We have this beautiful property, but we have a mortgage on it. And because we have a mortgage on it, it's affecting every day of our life. It's taking up like a piece of my brain. You know, I have to allocate a lot of my waking moments thinking about making sure that I make enough money to pay that mortgage. And, you know, you have to be concerned about when things go wrong in the property and blah, blah, blah. Like, it just takes up some real estate, right? And we love the property, but we eventually decided like, nah, we just got to get rid of that. Like, it's not worth it. And so we sold the property, and that was the moment we became finally debt free. And man, it just like, first of all, even though we loved it, once it was gone, we didn't think about it anymore. Like, we were just holding on to it. It was almost just like selfishness, or like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, it wasn't logical for us to hold on to that and like essentially hurt ourselves with the debt. And once we finally made the decision to get rid of it, it's like, oh man, we're literally debt free. It liberated our brains. It gave us way more autonomy to take risks financially and in our life. And we didn't miss it. We still had our property. Like, we didn't need that thing. And you know what? If we ever want to go back to a property like that, we'll look for one down the road somewhere. Maybe we'd even find a better one. So maybe I would encourage people, like, if you can see, like, in your brain, like, you understand you might have to give up something, but like, think past it. What will it be like? I can give up this, but I could get that. And that's what we did. And like, maybe I'm you in the future saying like, it's awesome. Like, do it, you know, make that hard decision. And you're not going to make it. It's not like you're doing it on faith. Like, you understand it's just hard to do. It's just hard to give up something good. But you know you'll probably get something better.
Yeah, I don't think success really comes without sacrifice. You just decide on what. It can be a sacrifice of money, of something that you enjoy doing, a sacrifice of time. But every success has a sacrifice and discipline that goes along with it, right? Discipline, I always say, is doing what, having an uncomfortable today for a comfortable tomorrow. That's discipline, where the way most people live is a comfortable today for an uncomfortable tomorrow. Yeah. That's why we have like 80% of people, even if their retirement looks okay, they're right at the edge the entire time, where by that point in your life, you shouldn't be anymore because of the lack of discipline and an unwillingness to sacrifice. So once you target what, if you really mean you want what you say you want, then it's pretty much a very simple system of, this is what it takes to do that. Here's the short-term interim goals. Here's a metric by which I judge whether I'm advancing on that goal. And either I'm doing it or I'm not. And if I'm not doing it, I need to kick my own ass and make myself do it. But that's going to make you do some things you don't want to do or give up some things you don't want to give up. But do you really want it, or do you want to talk about it? Is it mental masturbation, or is it a life objective? And once you make that delineation, you will find there's some things you go, you know what? I really don't want that. That's good. Now you can quit dicking around with it and spending your mental gears on it and go do the thing that you really are willing to sacrifice for. But by God, find something, because life's too short, man. You get one trip through this, this ride we call life. And then, you know, there are a lot of different opinions about what happens next, but we know one thing, you won't be here. Right. You'll have whatever you left behind to the people you leave behind. On that, because when you start thinking about leaving people behind, you start thinking about your future as well. What are your plans for your future? Would you ever move back to an in-town type life? Would you move further off grid? Like, what is the balance there for you? Are you just going happy where you are?
Yeah, I cannot foresee the circumstance where I move any closer to town.
Same.
Put it that way. So I could foresee a circumstance where I move further out. And like I said, Starlink and solar, you can go anywhere. And I also view things a little bit different. I don't feel like if I made a move to something more remote,
yeah,
or just somewhere different, it doesn't mean like that's going to be better than here forever, yeah, and always. It might be like that's better for now. And even if it's not better, at least we tried something. And then maybe it's not the final step. Maybe you make another step. Like this is the fourth rural acreage we've owned.
Yeah.
You know, the first one, we were there a couple years and we learned a ton of stuff and it was great. But then we're like, let's do a different one. So you don't have to imagine, like when you look at the next move you're looking to take, you don't have to say, is that going to be the perfect place or the perfect, yeah, scenario? Like, should I quit this job, take that job, move to that town? Like, maybe I won't like the town. Maybe you won't. Maybe after a year or two, you try stuff, you learn stuff, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to do something different. But for us, it never meant going back. It was always like, oh, we can taste it. You know, we've learned stuff, but now we're going to do that. And so here, yeah, we've been here 15 years. But I'm definitely a bit of an adventurer. Like, I like to do different stuff. I've learned so much here. I'd kind of love to redo it and do it better and, mm-hmm, and things like that. And so I don't know, but at this point there'd be no way you could drag me back to town.
Yeah. Maybe further out, but not back. Right.
Like it's so peaceful out here. It's like half night. It's dark and you can see, yeah, the stars and it's quiet. Like, there's no city noises.
Yeah.
You can hunt from your back door. Like it's amazing to be out in the space, you know.
How far out are you? And what I mean by that is how far are other people, like what's your closest neighbor? And then like how far is it to, if you do need something, you have to go to town, you have to get some hardware or something like that.
Yeah. So we bought this property, it's 40 acres, and we bought it with good friends and we split it. So they have half, we have half. And so they are very close neighbors.
Okay.
On this 40 acres. Just one other family. They got two kids. So that was fun. Like the last 15 years with the kids young. Outside of that, we're 100% surrounded by Crown land. There's no one else out here. So to drive to like our closest friend's house, like driving away is like half an hour.
Okay.
And probably the closest person in an emergency, if you just needed like a human,
yeah,
it's still probably like 15, 20 minutes. And then, you know, when I moved here, I was still working like a 9-to-5 job when we first moved here. And so at that time, it was probably about an hour to get into like the town.
Okay. I've driven an hour to work and back for many, many, many years. I didn't care for it, but your commute, yeah, was probably better than mine anyway, because
a little more scenic, yeah.
Not in bumper to bumper traffic either, you know.
Yeah.
My hour drive was really a 35-minute drive that was turned into an hour by other humans. That's really what that was. So like that town you worked in, that'd be the closest place you could get like pipe. Or roofing material, or animal feed, or whatever.
That's right. Yep.
So how do you handle like provisioning then? Do you take a trailer and buy enough feed for the animals for 3-4 months at a time, or?
Yeah, we the animal feed for sure. So we buy as much as we can from local farms. So we've got good friends that we buy all our hay from, and you know, in hay season or as soon as we can, we go pick up trailers and we get the whole winter's worth.
Okay.
And that's actually kind of cool. Like when you look at 20, 30, 40 hay bales, you're like, man, we are wealthy in feed, you know, and it's on our property, you know, like it is like a stack of wealth there. And it's different than what most people think of in wealth. But when you have domestic animals, it's like, man, that guy's loaded. Like, have you seen his hay pile?
Yes.
And pigs, you know, we buy grain, like mini bags of grain. So, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 pounds at a time. And then like when we go to town, we like to try and keep it to like once every week or 10 days for kind of a town trip. And so, yeah, you know, 3-4 times a month, Rose does a town trip. Yeah.
All right. So it's not hell and gone, but it's far enough. No. You see people when you want to.
Yeah.
Even living in like more in town or whatever. We've had family members be great if you lived across the street. No, it wouldn't. No, and I want to be able to see you whenever I want to.
Yeah.
I want to be able to not see you when I don't want to. I don't want it so convenient that you just walk across the street. Oh, there you are. A little bit of space.
Well, it's had a little bit of like that little house in the prairie feel where, like you know, when we do have friends over, they usually come for like 3-4 days.
Stay
in the guest house, then, you know, we hang out for the weekend and we do a thing. Or like if we go visit friends, I mean, most of them are kind of out of town. You wouldn't visit them for the day anyways. But like, you know, you go there for the weekend, and it's just, it's kind of different than just like, hey, come over for dinner, which we can do with some of our friends as well. But like, I don't know. I kind of like that old fashioned feel where it's like, yeah, we only see you once every month or two. But when we do, like, man, we hang out.
Yeah. What, you want to tell people a little bit about some of the things you have available? I mean, you have your book. I can bring that up on the stream while you talk about this. But you also have, like you were saying, your YouTube channel and some other things.
Yep. Yeah, so we've been on the YouTube for 9 years. And, I feel like I hope we're getting better at making, like, a watchable video. And we've shared lots of hunting stories and off-grid stories and adventures and homesteading, and you know, there's kind of a wide variety. It's just our lifestyle on YouTube. And then the book, like I said, I was kind of forced to by an injury. I was forced to sit down and write it because writing's not, I don't know, it took a lot of motivation. But this thing turned into like a fun project, and I don't know, people seem to like it, so we'll see, you know, how it goes. I mean, a lot of the first people who bought it are probably subscribers that we've, you know, told about it.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, it's in Canada, it stayed like as a bestseller since it's come out in the last month. So I'm hoping that's indicating that it's, you know, going to have a life beyond just like a little niche product for my, you know, for our community. And
that's how it usually is with a book. Like, it's hard to get a book off the ground without a community.
Yeah.
But if you have one, once you get it off the ground with your community, especially in Amazon, like KDP book, which I'm pretty sure you did what I did, then it starts to get its own legs and take off.
Right.
And like, your book's like 90 something thousand in all books. There's like 56 million titles.
Yeah.
So that ain't so bad when you look at it that way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully, I mean, by all means, check it out. If you're, it's not like a how to, it's our story. And
sure,
it's a bit of a, you know, I'd say it's a success story for anyone who wants to, you know, get out, do things different, be autonomous.
And I've got Jeff's book, their website, which is gridless.com, YouTube channel X, Instagram, and Facebook, all in the notes that I have for them. So when I publish the audio side, all of those links will be there. If you don't mind, man, we only got like 4 questions. Let's hit those and then I'll let you go. Question from Vincent. What type of batteries and inverter does he suggest?
Well, it totally depends on what you're talking about. But I've been using lithium ion. I was an early adopter. I've had them for a long time, and they've been amazing. I know there's so many varieties now. Mine were the Simplify, which I think has been bought by Briggs now.
Okay.
But they're the, you know, I think most of them now are the ferrous phosphate, and they're just amazing compared to lead acid, because we did lead acid for quite a while before that.
Yeah.
And the inverter, I'm still using a Magnesign 48 volt. It's a 4.5 kilowatt. And that thing actually, I mean, it's been humming nonstop for well over a decade now.
Oh, wow.
And I'm just replacing the fans. Just noticed.
Okay.
Just noticed that the fans are on their last leg. So that's the first time I've ever opened it up, actually. So that thing's been amazing.
And when you're off grid, you do have to think a little bit differently. We're not off grid at all, but like, we do have things that are off grid, like having a well. So you have to think about the fact that that well pump will die someday. Yeah. If you're running a solar array, those panels have a life expectancy, but so do the more expensive batteries. Like, you have to, in that time, build up some level of emergency fund so that when shit needs replacing, you can do it without going in the hawk for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Next up, the Chemo Cop says, what are your thoughts on whole home generators for backup, such as a Generac, gas or propane or both?
It's a very timely question because I'm probably going to do something a little bit different here coming up. I've just been using the incredibly cheap Costco generators.
Yeah.
But honestly, I'm on my third in the last 15
years. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, probably good value for your money, but at the same time, they've never been, like, as reliable as a Honda generator.
Yeah.
So, I will probably move to just a Honda, like a mobile Honda. I will probably not get up here. The problem with propane is when you need it most, when it's super cold, propane can not float.
Yeah.
And it can like freeze in the tank. So I'm a little bit, I'm not really convinced to go propane, but the benefit is if you don't have the cold temperature, you can have an easy, you can have a year's worth of propane in a big tank. If you got people who like deliver. Most rural areas like here, they'll deliver propane. We don't have one of those things. We just deal with 100-pounders mostly.
Yeah.
And I'm not familiar with the Generac. Like, I don't have experience with it.
They won't run that long on a tank that size if you're doing the things that it's capable of doing with it. And because even if you're not putting much load on a generator, there's a base set of fuel utilization for that thing to run. The Generacs, where I've seen them to be best, is people that have grid gas, like where you have liquid natural gas that ain't going to freeze, that's flowing 3 foot underground and coming up through a meter into your house. Especially for guys that travel for work. Like if I don't do that, cause I've got a lot of freedom here with what I can do, but there's certain things that providers won't do. And one is, even if I were to do all the installation myself, no propane company will fill like a 500 or 1,000 gallon pig that's not at least 30 yards from my house. And trenching that distance in my rock is cost prohibitive. So I have a little 120 gallon propane tank sitting right behind that wall, and that you can do close to the house, and that runs my stove and not much more. So we don't have enough natural gas that really makes sense to invest, you know, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 in a Generac. Friends I have that are on natural gas, it's like nothing happened when the power goes out. It's like click, back up. Like, it's that fast. And when we had that huge freeze down here in Texas, which would have been a joke for y'all, but we are not built for that shit.
Yeah.
And because some of the people down here are on like this variable rate power, in that period, it was stupid expensive, like $1 a minute or some shit. People were like just getting nuked for. Well, my one friend who has one of those backup generators, as soon as he heard that was going, he just went out before they lost power. He just shut the main down, said, screw this, I'm off, and just let the generator run the house. And when everybody was, you know, freezing up and everything, he was fine. And so I think those have a real place, but it's, do you have the fuel availability to make them what they are? Because the other side of that is, I've got a couple, you know, pull start generators like you're talking about. And if the power goes out, first thing I do is nothing. Because if it's going to come back in a couple hours, I don't need to do anything. I think you start checking like the repair. Okay, it's going to be a while. I pull them out, run some extension cords and shit, done, and it takes me 10 minutes to do it. If I were traveling like I used to, trying to walk my wife through that, it ain't going to happen, you know? And, you know, as we get older, certain things that we were easily able to do, like pull a recoil start or whatever, that declines too. Or, you know, if somebody's injured a little bit, maybe not enough, they can't take care of themselves, but that makes things harder. So if I was still, because I used to be gone 3 weeks a month, if I was still doing that, I'd have something like that no matter what, so that when I was gone, she was looked after. And I think those are better for that than off-grid. Off-grid, I think, you know, you should be doing what you're doing. Maybe you could come up with some automation start. Like I know a guy out in California, he's on solar and he has his set up to where it charges the batteries up to a certain point, and then once it's all topped off and you've got basically as much as you can store, you got surplus, he has a Bitcoin miner that kicks on. Oh, yeah. And he's mining Bitcoin with a surplus for the rest of the day. But then he's also got, it's like you had bad weather or whatever, and the generator needs to kick on. Once the storage in the battery goes below like 50%, the generator kicks on, brings the battery up, and then the generator shuts off. Like that might work. But what he's talking about are those great big giant, you can run your HVAC, you can run it. It's for city folks. And to me, they're just not the tool for what we're talking about today. Kevin says, are smaller individual windmills beneficial at all in high wind areas to produce power?
So I don't have personal experience with wind, but I do have a friend with a wind turbine, and he's in a windy spot. And overall, yes, it's worthwhile. Like it just, he's off grid, but he has a combination of wind and solar. And they often, you know, the beauty about the wind is, man, if it's windy at night, it's always going to outcompete your solar.
Zero or something wins.
Yeah, and they're not that expensive, but like you really do need to be in a high wind area, and it really, in my opinion, is going to be like it's going to augment like a solar system.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'd say like the holy grail for unlimited power is if you live somewhere you can do small scale hydro.
Right.
It's very rare that all the things align and you can, but when they do, and I said that solar is the cheapest power there is, and I'm cheating when I ignore hydro there, because I was just actually reading Henry Ford's book from 1922 this morning, and he was lamenting how all the people in the Mississippi River Valley pay for power that's made by burning coal, and there's no coal in the river valley, and so they're paying more than it costs to buy coal because they can't produce coal, so they have to ship it in. And he's like, you have this giant river just running through the whole middle of, like, there could be all these little satellite towns and manufacturing facilities, everything built off of it. Of course, everybody at the time told him he was nuts. He's like, have you seen New England? Because that's exactly what they did in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution in New England. There was hydropower ran the whole damn region of the United States. Right. So if you can figure out how to do that, it is, to hydraulic ram pumps. I mean,
some of our most popular videos are micro hydro videos.
Yeah.
I've got friends with these systems, and man, they're just cool. Like, besides being awesome and cheap and 24/7, sometimes all year round, like, they are a dream for sure. And in this region, in BC, like, we're pretty mountainous, and so there's tons of hydro resources.
You got water everywhere.
Yeah.
You got springs popping out of the rocks for no reason at all, other than water's like, I can be here. We don't have as much of that down here in Tejas. Last question before I let you go. Kevin says, has Canada passed legislation or done anything to stop or regulate off-grid homesteads like some places in the United States?
Not that I know of. And we might be communist in a lot of respects, but but so far in BC, I'm not aware of any kind of rules that are limiting my ability to, you know, install a solar system and be off grid.
Yeah. I think that's way overplayed here as to the limitations. Whenever I check into these things, it's always like, well, this is a person that lived in town and they didn't say they couldn't have, you know, alternative energy. What they said is you have to pay a connection fee.
Right.
Because you're connected to the grid, where and they don't let them disconnect. Right. And then they're paying, a couple hundred a year or something in a service fee that they don't need. I think it's wrong, but it doesn't prevent going to live off grid. Our biggest impediments to off grid, except everybody just ignores it and does it anyway, no one really gets in trouble with it, with some rare exceptions, is we have a lot of places that you can't do rain catch.
Oh.
And that is, and it's states with low water, and water rights go way back. I mean, to early settlement, states with contentious water bullshit against each other, like Nebraska and freaking Colorado, always fighting over water. But everybody does it anyway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like if you're living in the middle of bumfuck Colorado, there ain't a lot of people driving around going, hi, he's got water catchment or whatever.
Yeah.
And then that's been a big, but where people get in trouble with it in certain lands, certain watersheds, is ponds. When they start putting ponds in it, you don't have the right to the water that falls on your property. And man, they don't do that here in Texas. I'll be on the damn roof with an M2. Right? Like you're not, no, like you're not, we're not going to have that. We're not even, that's not even open for discussion, but I would say that's different if you buy a piece of property and you knew that restriction was there when you bought it. Like, don't buy land in that place. But I just want to be careful with the guy that asked the question. Please be sure, sir, you are not using this as an excuse not to act. Because I call it toolbox fallacy. I see it all the time. Well, you can't do this. You can't. Bullshit, because there's people doing it everywhere. So go do it and don't use it as an excuse not to act. Because I don't think this dude is, because I kind of know him. But there's a lot of people out there like that. Well, they won't let you do this. They won't. Have you tried? You know, or you just want to like blame somebody else for the fact that you live in a, I don't know, a freaking one bedroom, 400 square foot apartment that you pay $1,200 a month for. I mean, because there are people like that, you know, where you live, you probably don't see many of them, which
well,
is really
I mean, there's something to be said for living on a property where people like, where you don't see other people and they don't see you. It's like no one's bothering us here because we're not in anyone's face, right? Like we don't have a neighbor that we're annoying. Like if we had a neighbor that we had some sort of dispute with, well, oh man, they'll find something you're doing wrong. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, so no, I think
that's kind of the root of a lot of these issues is someone's just complaining about something. If you're just doing your own thing and you're not bothering anyone and no one's like staring at you from their bathroom window, then
yep. Yeah.
They're probably good.
It's a complaint driven system. Generally, it's not people looking for you. It's the Karens that call. I had a good friend. He was a good dude, but he could be a Karen in certain situations. And he I don't remember even what it was, but he bitched about one of the neighbors to code enforcement. And when code enforcement came, they cited as many people as they could in the neighborhood because the guy had to leave his desk and he was out and about. And if I write enough citations, my boss will leave me alone for a month. And my buddy who did the reporting, and I told him it was just friggin' karma, he had a citation. I'm like, see, all you had to do, Howells, keep your mouth shut, and that wouldn't have happened. That would have never happened to you, you know? Anyway, man, hey, I appreciate you being with us today, Jeff.
Yeah, this was fantastic. Thanks a lot, Jack.
And like I said, I'll make sure that your book and all your other links are in the show notes. Right down there in the video notes, if you're watching the video instead of listening to the audio, there's a link. It'll take you over to the audio version. And if you're watching it while it's still live and you click it right now, it won't work because we're not done yet, but we will be soon. Jeff, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, man. Catch you later.
All right, folks, real quick, let me wrap up. Thanks for tuning in today, first of all. But as always, you can always help support us by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. I got an item of the day for you that would work off-grid or on-grid as long as you have power. These are Ciantech remote control light switch kit, but they're not just for lights. They're for anything you plug into a 110 outlet. It's really simple. You get five remote ends and one, or actually two remote controls to work them all. And all you do is you plug it in, you plug the device into them that you want to be able to turn on and off. And it's like a TV remote for anything electric that you can turn on and off by turning the power on and off. You know what we're using them for right now? Dorothy's Christmas tree forest. We got a Christmas tree forest in there. You might need a hell of a solar array to run. It's so big as it is, and she builds it every year. And all of the stuff's plugged in, and there's jumper cables everywhere. It looks like Christmas Vacation, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, with all the cords stacked up, and you can't get back there to turn them all on and off. I'll just click and they're all, you know, turn them all on in one sweep and everything comes on and we go to bed. We turn them all off. There's a lot of other things we can do for them. In my shop, I wanted to be able to turn my high shop lights on, but not all of them at the same time. So I have 50% of them on the light switch on the wall. The other 50% I just routed to another plug that has these in them so I can turn it on in zones. Now in my back shop, I took a couple of the cheapo box fans put them up on the roof, plug them into an outlet up there. And that way, when I walk in, if I want ceiling fans, I actually have fans that move the air. Pretty cool. It's kind of unlimited what you can do with them. And it is Christmas time, and they're great for Christmas lights when you don't want them on a timer, you want them on demand. And they're also 37% off today. Remember, you can help us out no matter what you buy, as long as you do your online shopping starting at tspaz.com. We talked about Jeff's book real quick today. I'll pimp my book a little bit. Laws of Life by Jack Spierko. You can find it on Amazon. You can certainly go through T-Spaz when you buy it, and I'll pick up an extra 45 cents per copy if you do it that way. Again, thank you guys for tuning in. I'll catch you tomorrow with an expert counsel Q&A show, and that will wrap up the week.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.